Okay, so this is going to be very different from pretty much everything you've seen before because I'm not going to talk a lot about research. I'm going to kind of skim over it, but my young friend Zach Lancaster already talked about some of the research that we're interested in and participated in last year. I am going to talk about what we're doing, which requires a lot more research, and so this is almost more of a call to action for at least the folks that are remaining in here, and then maybe my question at the end will help with some of that too. So again, Mac Keeley, Blue River Technology is about a five-year-old company based in the Silicon Valley. We've collected a bunch of folks. We've got about 50 employees, about 25 of whom are engineers, various disciplines, artificial intelligence, computer science. We've got a guy who developed the Roomba, right, the little robot that goes around your house and vacuums things up. Folks from Trimble, which is guidance systems, that sort of thing. And we are intending to build smart machines for agriculture. So although we're based in Silicon Valley, that's mostly because that's where the engineering talent is. And there's a couple of folks like me who are based in, I'm in Tulsa, and there's some different activities we've got out in the field. So we kind of think of eras in crop protection, right? So we started out many years ago with something called a set of tools called hand tools, right? And then became mechanical, and then eventually chemical, and then genetic modification, so on and so forth. Well, now we kind of think of ourselves as being in the digital era, and our responsibility is to take all of these previously developed tools, apply sort of the digital framework to it, and utilize those in a new way. And that's what we call smart machines, and you'll hear me talk about See and Spray, which is the application for cotton that we have. See and Spray technology is actually for weed control, right? So essentially what we're talking about here is an implement pulled by a tractor. I had a question for Zach about automation of the tractor itself, so that's a whole different thing that we're not working on. We're working on very precise vision systems using machine learning and then doing something about it, right? So we're going to spray something very precisely and hopefully kill the weed and not kill the crop plant. Why are we doing this? Well, there's a healthy and vibrant multi-billion-dollar herbicide industry, right? And on top of that, there's additional weed control methods such as employing dozens or hundreds, or in the case of vegetables, at least thousands of people to go out with hose and clean weeds that way. Essentially unsustainable. We've talked about herbicide resistance. We've talked about a lot of things that sort of give us the feeling that, hey, maybe there's a digital way to do this, right? Maybe there's a smarter way to do this. So a couple of examples of how we think that today's world can be changed for tomorrow, right? For growers tomorrow is, well, the examples here, farmers are limited right now to a few herbicides that control weeds but don't harm the crops, right? In the future, farmers can potentially access, the entire toolkit. I've heard a few people talk about the herbicide toolkit. And choose what's best for their situation, whether they're in this region or this environment or whatever. Another example would be growers are pretty reliant on a few modes of action, right, which among other things has caused some of the herbicide tolerance, herbicide resistance over the years. In the future, perhaps there's a new way to control some of these currently tolerant weeds, right? Maybe we can apply some different materials only to that weed get control of those herbicide tolerant weeds. Just one more example here would be broadcast spraying, of course, is spraying material to places where you don't need that material, right? Maybe some of the soil in between the plants, maybe some crops that are neighboring the field, maybe some other limitations there. If we're spraying only exactly where we want to spray and only on that weed, perhaps we can use a lot less material. Perhaps we can use different materials. Perhaps we can use different rates of that material and get better efficacy. So just a couple of examples of why we're investing in this, right, and why our investors are investing in this. So to make a See and Spray system, we need at least sort of two major areas solved. One is we need to see all the plants in the field. So we employ, like I mentioned, machine learning or deep learning. And then to tie that to a vision system, and then tie that to a very precise spray system. Deep learning, so does anyone use Facebook here? I'm sure somebody besides me uses Facebook. When I don't put a lot of pictures into Facebook, but or better example is my wife. She uses Facebook a lot. So she'll put a picture of me into Facebook, right? And at some point she named me in it. She said, this is Mac Keeley. So then on subsequent occasions, when I'm older and grayer and have a beard or don't have a beard or whatever, Facebook, and she puts another picture in of me, Facebook says, wait, I think I recognize this guy. Is this Mac Keeley? And she says, yes, right? And so then a month later, my mom puts a picture in from when I was in college, right? So 20 years ago. And Facebook says to my mom, is this Mac Keeley? So the machine is learning, right? The machine's got a little bit of information, and now it's starting to use different parameters that it decided were important. And it's saying, okay, now I'm getting smarter to help you, right? And that's sort of this idea of deep learning. What we do is we label the plants, right? We label, hey, this is a cotton plant, this is not. This is a lettuce plant, this is not. And to the extent that we can give the machine a few different ideas of what to look for, it starts to find more things to look for and just gets itself smarter. That's the whole idea of deep learning and machine learning. An example of this would be, here's cotton. We've got some labels on the, what would that be, on your left side, where a person labeled the crop, right? Oops, I didn't do that right. A person labeled the crop and said, in the red box, this is a weed, and in the, what does it show up there, it's a green box, this is the crop plant, right? Then we had the machine do it without the labels. And the machine was able to do the same work, was able to find the weed and find the crop. And in fact, it actually found a weed that the person did not find. And so at this point, we used to use people to label all these things. At this point, you know, going forward from about actually 2 months ago going forward, we only use the machine. We don't do this anymore. So as we go into other crops, we wouldn't have to actually go in and label, this is a weed, this is a soybean, this is a weed, this is a peanut, so far. So just as an example. The second step is we need to spray very precisely, right? So this is an example of lettuce thinning, right? So we have some machines that we developed in the first couple of years of our company that we operate now as actually a service in California and Arizona, where we thin the lettuce crop. So the machine is going through and finding which plant it wants to keep, which is the plant there in the middle without the dark area around it, and it's killing everything else. I won't go into the machine learning part, but that's being employed here. The main point that we're trying to make is that we're spraying with, this is, like I said, about three-year-old technology now, we're spraying to within a quarter-inch accuracy at about 4 miles an hour in lettuce fields, and we're doing about 20% of the lettuce crop right now with our limited number of machines. Crop safety is another point I can just make here. So you can see that, go over here. The machine got the machine learned that essentially I need to go this far to kill the plant that I'm passing right now. Then I can wait a little longer, right? So I don't have the same. We're talking, you know, microseconds here. I can take more microseconds, get further away from that crop plant, and create more crop safety, right? Because I don't need to start spraying yet. And so that's another example of a very what's required in a very precise spray system. And then this is the result of it, right? So you've got these plants are probably 2 inches apart. So we've been able to kill all those plants going up to the keep plant, not touch at all, not create any damage at all on the keep plant, and then kill the plants subsequent. So I've got a couple of videos here, or one video. This is our brand new, right out of the box, without very much improvement yet, our new spray system that we're going to be using for weed control. So you can see that the machine is, it's actually moving pretty slow here, but this is a lab environment where it's killing weeds in the row with a very precise spray system. And now this is in the field in lettuce. And it's also doing the same thing a little faster here. This is, I think, 2 miles an hour or something. Like I said, with the thinning machines, we run about, we can run up to 4 miles an hour. With the cotton machines, we should be able to run faster so that we can cover more acreage as well. So coverage is important to Zach's experiments. But this machine's going through and it's finding plants that it wants to kill and it's leaving plants it doesn't want to kill. Part of our experimentation in the future is going to be actually what another thing that Zach mentioned is how much damage can we cause a cotton plant at this stage and the cotton plant lives through it. And anyway, so another, remind me about the shirt thing, right? And we'll talk about the call to action. So the toolbox, right? So right now the toolbox maybe it's a little larger than what I put up here, for example. But on the left for the broadcast application, on the right, I mean, in reality, maybe the toolbox is a lot larger. If we're spraying only where we want to spray, we're not spraying over the top of the crop, we're not spraying neighboring fields, you know, that sort of thing. Maybe the toolbox is a little larger, and we actually have more tools than we think we have, which is why we want to do a lot more experimentation. That we've done. However, we did get started this last year. A couple of the top weed science experts from the University of Arkansas helped us do some work on what kind of materials would be appropriate to use here in this type of application. So anyway, like I said, I'm not going to go through deeply into this stuff because Zach went through a lot of it already. It was a pigweed trial. We're trying to kill pigweed. What kills it, right? And what doesn't kill it? And how big can it be? And all that sort of thing. Six treatments, four replicates each, so on and so forth. We'll talk about Liberty versus Clarity versus Gramoxone plus Caprol. Quite a few pictures here. Oh, I'm past my 15 minutes. All right, I'm going to go fast. Oh, okay, I got 5 minutes. I'm still going to go fast. So we've got a number of pictures here of day of application, right? Lots of opportunity to kill weeds there. Almost a couple of weeks after application, and you can see maybe there's some opportunity to improve on the Liberty and Clarity, and probably still some opportunity to improve on the Gramoxone. But we're starting to find materials that we could use in this type of application that would kill weeds, especially large weeds. So here's the Liberty prior to application, 12 days post-application. Really had a tough time on weed larger than 5 inches tall, or 5 inches or larger. Dicamba was even more interesting because it actually had kind of a knockdown effect, but those plants lived and they continued to grow. And so we think in a commercial environment, that those plants would live below the canopy, still growing and eventually producing seed and creating a problem in subsequent years, right, by improving the seed bank, depending on your perspective. So, some opportunity to improve there. You can see 6-inch plants were not killed. And then this is the Gramoxone plus Caprol. Pretty good control. Probably still some opportunity there, but yeah, we killed some plants that were pretty tall. I think Zach had some examples of maybe 18-inch plants or something. I should say they killed some plants. I didn't do it. So what's next for us, right? So how close are we? Well, we have two machines being built right now. We are setting up trialing activity and demoing activity for the Cotton Belt for this spring and summer. We've been out to Georgia. We've been out to Texas. We've been out to Arkansas. We're going to do those trips again. We're looking for relationships and looking for opportunities to do some trialing and help do some trialing for others that want to do it, either using our machine or perhaps even not using the machine but just playing with some different chemistries and that sort of thing that could be applied in a precision seed and spray platform like this. We do plan to market the products, these machines into the cotton market in 2018. And also, at that time, we'll also be developing sort of that software and the ability to use these machines in other crops. We'll be doing that work in 2018 and beyond. We're focusing right now on getting cotton off and running. Again, interested to help. I'm here looking to make some connections, right? So we're going to go, like I said, travel in the regions and talking with growers and talking with extension folks and university folks, but hey, we're here at the Beltwide, so let's talk here. Questions? Do I have any time left? All right. Any questions?
Yeah, so looking at the video, it looks like it's, I mean, it's fine pretty much for all the time. How does wind affect
Yeah, so well, the thing that would affect it wouldn't affect the accuracy so much because the large droplet size is intended to actually not drift or not move off target. Wind, actually, even in our current thinning machines, doesn't affect us very much. We use skirts and that sort of thing. We'll be applying probably 24 inches above the target. That's part of the research that we'll be doing. But generally speaking, the more pertinent question for us is, what happens if we don't hit the target? Well, we don't hit the we don't kill the weed, which is the biggest problem. But how much? Part of the discussions that we're having when we're out in the markets right now is, what if we kill a cotton plant that's right next to it? What if we damage it? What's the tolerance of the grower, right? And would they rather us kill a cotton plant on each side, but not have any plum or amaranth thrown there? Or would they rather us leave the cotton plant and allow the palm amaranth to grow, right? There's two extremes there, and we need to find somewhere in the middle. Probably the machine in the end will be set up with a dial, right? So you can be focus more on selecting for the weed or focus more on protecting for the crop. Yeah, so all of our work right now is part of it. We've got a pretty good understanding right now of what folks are spending on weed control, and we'll be within that window. So it won't be a more expensive. The expectation is that it's a fairly easy to use and potentially less expensive method to control. Depends on the problem, right? If you're just focused on escapes, maybe it's more expensive, but generally within the realm of the economics that a cotton grower can afford. You got it.
So in your smart learning picture you had like identification 1, identification 0.5, and identification 0.9. Is that the machine's estimate on the accuracy of it?
Yes. So I'm not the AI guy, but I can tell you that we use kind of what we call a jury. And so the jury is made up of a bunch of differences of opinion, and they try to come at the end to a common opinion. And that has to do with the jury scoring. Yeah. I had one back here before you. Okay.
So, years ago, the automobile technology really struggled with ground stress, water stress, and all those other things. Is that what that basic technology is talking about?
Yes, in a sense. So we went to Australia this year with a cart to go take pictures of cotton. We've seen over the last few years, we've been doing a lot of looking at lettuce. We've seen every way that God put lettuce on the face of the earth, right? We do that because the more opportunities we have to see something, the more opportunities we have for the machine to learn. And so it's going to see irrigation stress cotton, it's going to see nutrition stress cotton, various types of nutrition. We won't necessarily label at this point, we don't have an interest in labeling what the reason for the stress is, but just that, okay, that's still cotton. It's still got the shape. It's still within the realm of colors that we see it. It's still in the right location. It's still generally the right size. It's still, so on and so forth. If you think about lettuce, so we've got lettuce and romaine and green leaf and red leaf and butter lettuce and so on and so forth. We don't tell the machine what type of lettuce it is. It goes in there. It takes a calibration pass or two, and it figures it out. Sure. Yeah, so there will be, we're trying not to have a lot of programming requirements on the in the cab, but eventually, you could have a number of different settings. So you could, so the volunteer cotton would be coming up in some other crop that we're weeding for, right? So say it's peanuts or something, and we have volunteer cotton coming up. Is that a good example? So we're weeding a peanut field, so therefore we're looking for peanuts, right? And something that's not peanuts is therefore a weed, and we want to kill that bit. So that's how that would work.